Chairman Gentz.
Here.
Supervisor Kubicki.
Here.
Supervisor Elverman.
Yes.
Supervisor Esposito.
Here.
Supervisor Hallman. Supervisor Brunig.
Here.
Supervisor Brose. Oh, Youth and Governance, Bell.
Here.
And Lyle.
Here.
Thank you. This time we'll open the meeting up to citizens' comments. Any citizens wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing to speak? Any citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Chair, Supervisor, Youth and Governance comments, I have none. Communications, I have none of those either. Approval of the January 14th, 2014 minutes.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. Update from General Ben regarding emergency management.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Well, I have kind of a brief update of where I am right now and what I intend to do with emergency management as I've taken over the beginning of the year. So I've broken this up into short-term goals and some long-term goals, and maybe take any questions if I could just give you this presentation on what I intend to do in the short term here. And that is to start to promote the EOC and the emergency management. Over the past few years, my perspective is, it seemed to me that we've kind of diminished a little bit, didn't have enough outreach into the public as maybe we could have. So my goal is to improve that outreach to the community, get more information out to the citizens about what's coming, about preparedness, about learning about hazardous events and how to get ready for them. I'm trying to get ready by bringing some exercises to the county. First on the agenda would be the public-private partnership. Now, that's a grant we worked through committees to bring to Kenosha County for public and private businesses to come together to prepare for any eventuality, for hazards, for anything that might affect private business or public entities. They come together and they work through problems together with facilitators from Madison. That's going to start on April the 9th down here in Kenosha. Next would be the Weather Spotter course. That's starting, I believe, on April the 8th in the evening. So we're going to invite citizens to come and learn from people from the Weather Service how to spot for tornadoes, how to look for hazardous weather for the summer. There'll be two courses for that, the 8th and the 14th. We got quite a good response on that so far. I'll wager we have at least 50 or 60 people that have already signed up for it. Very popular. That'll be held at the County Center. Next is the one that is kind of close to my heart because I've been working on it for so long, and it's kind of pertinent to today's problems everywhere in the communities, and that's the active shooter exercise. We started this last year because there were so many issues in so many communities about this issue of an active shooter, particularly in a school. We started the exercise sequence with tabletop that occurred last August, I believe it was. And we had buy-in from the hospitals, from the medical examiner, from the schools, from the fire departments, and also from our, you know, of course, the sheriff's department and the SWAT team. So they all stayed on board, and they were thrilled to find out that we did receive exercise grant money to take this active shooter exercise to a functional this summer, which means command and control, simulated real-time experience, and then in 2015 there'll be a full scale, and that's where we roll the cars, roll the scenarios, put on the fake blood, you know, the fake victims, and we really do the exercise. These things take a little while to build up and they're rather expensive, so it took a bit to gear this up, but I think it's going to be important for the community and for all of these other entities that haven't trained so much in this. I mean, look on the news and there's another active shooter in a school, somebody else with a gun in a school. This is something we really need to prepare for and train for, but it can't be done haphazardly. It's got to follow a sequence where we learn as we progress, culminating in that full scale in 2015. And as you imagine, it costs money. So I was pleased to find out from Wisconsin Emergency Management that Kenosha did receive the grant for $18,000. I'll be working that through committee. tomorrow and the next night through judiciary and law and then finance, I believe. So we're going to move forward rather quickly with that. In addition, there's another exercise that needs to follow through. And mainly, to be honest, this exercise started, I believe, in 2012. It dealt with hazardous materials. And as you know, part of our grant money in emergency management comes from Emergency Planning Grant and EPCRA, the Emergency Planning Citizens' Right to Know Act. And that money requires us to do a hazmat exercise, anything involving hazardous materials and transportation. This was started on a tabletop exercise where they, of course, talk around a table about what would happen, what would we do if. And it kind of fell to the wayside, but we are under a requirement to follow through with it, and I'm going to try to get that done. I have a commitment from WEM, Wisconsin Emergency Management, to bring facilitators down here and help us get that accomplished probably sometime this fall. And COOP. I was looking through our records, going through some of the files down there, and COOP. I know these are a lot of acronyms, but it's, if I remember right, it's continuation of government, continuation of command. In other words, if something should happen to any department, the sheriff's department, register of deeds, medical examiner, the department of the county, Brookside, there's a plan set in place, already written and thought through, how they would proceed if they had to move from their facility, who would be next in command if the director wasn't there to take charge. And the last time we had a COOP update was 2005. So this is, again, is on my, I guess it's turning into a long term, but again, I'd like to get it started this year and update those COOP plans. Continuation of government, continuity of planning. And on my wish list is a CERT class. Some of you may know what CERT is. Again, it's Citizens Emergency Response Teams. They were grant funded about 5 years ago through the AmeriCorps program. Since then, all that money has dissipated. It's no longer there. But there's been a lot of calls and a lot of community interest to run at least another CERT. In other words, bringing people in, citizens in, who can be trained how to help out in a disaster. Most recently, we had called up some CERT people who were trained from past classes to help us search for a despondent guy at Pets Park who would, you know, threaten suicide. His car was found out there, and you can imagine, we just don't have enough deputies to search Petrifying Springs Park. So they gladly came out and assisted us in doing the search of the park. So I don't know if there's going to be funding for that, but it's another effort I'm going to try to push forward. That's my short-term stuff. Now, long-term.
Let's, before I lose my train of thought, let's stick on these. You mentioned outreach. How do you plan on getting to those people, and what people are you targeting, and what is, you mentioned the plan in a broad generalization. What is your plan on that?
Generally, it's getting communication with the people, letting them know we exist down in emergency management and what my office does. I started by doing an interview with Kenosha News where they did an online video kind of describing myself and what I intend to do with emergency management. I also did a promotion on public preparedness for severe weather events, giving suggestions on emergency kits in the car. And usual press releases, I want to try to get out a little more. I'd like to do a radio interview. I haven't done that yet. Again, it's a lot of stuff, but since I've been given the position, I found it to be really interesting. It's a variance from what I'm used to in law enforcement, and I really dug into it and found it really interesting. So it's a lot of stuff, but I really enjoy it. So that's why I wanted to at least get the office, get this out to the public to know that you know, public emergency management exists, and the office can help them throughout the year with severe weather notices, planning for flooding, and things such as that.
What about meetings at libraries or going into schools?
That's another issue we can get involved in. I'm also part of that safety committee with Unified, and I want to bring them into this active shooter scenario too. And they were thrilled to hear about that. That's another avenue. I just finished a PowerPoint. Unfortunately, it's a little long to present here tonight, but I've just finished a PowerPoint to go and do just that type of presentations. It's a general outlook of what emergency management does for a county, why it exists, how it occurred, and how it works in the Emergency Operations Center, the building downstairs.
The active shooter program, you didn't mention Kenosha Police. Are they involved with that?
Yes, I'm sure are part of that also, or will be once we start the planning process.
Okay. What about the power plant out there? Are there any issues with that regarding emergencies or?
Mainly what we rely on as far as emergencies with power plant or some of the industrial sites is our LEPC, the Local Emergency Planning Committee. And they oversee all the hazardous materials or hazardous substances or dangerous entities that could pose a risk for the county. And of course, that meets quarterly. There are members from various areas, business, public, private, that are on that board that overview those things. The power plants, how Zion Nuclear Plant is being decommissioned and what their plans are. I've been in touch with a guy named Larry, I believe it is Booker down there, who's leading that down at Alliant or Energies down there. And I do a visit down there with some of those LEPC members. I don't have anything planned yet for the power plant, but eventually I will. I'll take a tour out there and get an idea of what entails that whole facility.
Okay, the last one is, this just came to me when you mentioned hazardous material. Are we notified when people are bringing it through the county?
Yes, depending on what it is. If it's an extremely hazardous substances and it's coming by rail or by flatbed, we are notified. Last trouble we had with that caused a stir was when they sectioned off one of the nuclear heads of the Zion nuclear plant and they were transporting it out to who knows where in Nevada. It was coming through on flatbed, and that caused quite a stir for some of the communities. There was no real danger of contamination. It's contained in a huge structure, but it did cause some strife then. Because of that, Zion, and this was the last meeting, opted to transport by other means, not going through Kenosha County. They did it by rail through another means. So, but to answer your question, anything of a hazardous, extremely hazardous substance, it's on a list. And we're to be notified if it comes through.
Okay. Any other? Supervisor Kubicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned having a full-blown scenario in 2015,
yes.
And we've got a grant coming, I think it's Thursday.
That's the
through
one,
finance, yes. I think. You're going to have judiciary and law look at it first before that. What do you anticipate the cost for that full-scale scenario to be?
I don't have the figures in front of me, but I'm expecting it to cost $8,000 to $9,000.
Okay.
And again, the reason I submitted for the grant is I don't have the expertise to run an exercise that's qualified by FEMA, but there are consultants that do. And by obtaining the grant, it allows me to go out there and get that expert facilitator, mm-hmm. and then have them come in and do it. So I can maintain my own duties. And of course, be a part of it and be planning with it, but it relieves me of the added responsibility, which I'm not an expert on.
Well, I think it's a great thing to do. I've been part of it myself, my line of work as well. And then also, you mentioned we haven't done nothing in hazmat since 2012, I believe.
The last hazmat exercise, yes, 2012.
Now, do you have the local fire departments like Bristol, Pleasant Prairie, Summers, Kenosha get involved with this when you do have a scenario?
I would like to do that in a command in this next exercise. I haven't dealt with that yet. Mm-hmm. One of my challenges here is to get these various entities to agree to come together and, let's say, play together nice in the sandbox, to make an old analogy.
Right, because technically it can affect many communities, and we can get help from other communities as well and work together. And I agree with you, it's hard to do.
It is, and I thought it would be easier than it is, but I'm gradually working towards that end. As you know, there are more than one gas line or pipeline that runs through the county, something I found out when I came to the office. there's at least two that I know of that run right through Kenosha County, and this could happen either in the county or the city. This particular one that started in 2012 is one that runs right near 22nd Avenue, terminating by near Vans Gas, I believe. And that's the one I want to continue on with Kenosha Fire Department particularly. I would like to invite the county. I plan to. Whether or not they attend or want to be part of it, of course, I can force them to.
Oh, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions or comments before? Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry if I've taken too much time.
Oh, not at all. Just keep.
Long term. And this is something that I think would benefit more than just emergency management, the county in general. And this goes to my general experience here at the county for 20-some years, is I've noticed rather a good upgrade of various departments. This building, the courthouse, other departments, Brookside, it's a great thing. You know, we're moving along. But this one little entity called the Emergency Operations Center has kind of been left in the basement. It started back in the civil defense days when the big threat was, you know, the nuclear bomb, the bomb going off. So they hid this little emergency management center down in the, you know, under the depths of buildings, like most counties did. Now that the Zion nuclear threat is gone, and it's unlikely that we'll see any kind of nuclear explosions, we may want to start looking at, and I'm going to try to promote the plans to bring the EOC from the basement up to the second floor of the PSB where the open shell is. Now, I don't presume to, you know, be setting policy, but I think that's something the county should consider and look at. And if they do decide to go in that direction, I'd like to be a part of that planning process. It's what I'd like to see happen in the future. And it may feed into some other issues the county deals with, such as the medical examiner needing room. We vacate that room downstairs, and that provides space, or much needed space, for possibly the medical examiner and their needs, and possibly others. I don't know if that will happen, but it's a long-term wish list, I guess. And to follow up would be our sirens. This is not so much a goal, but kind of a notification that most people don't realize. I thought I'd better bring it up to you. The sirens, again, starting way back in the 50s, I believe, as part of the civil defense, the duck and cover era. And then from that, the nuclear Zion nuclear plant that was active required more sirens. And then after that, as Kenosha grew, more sirens were added. So right now, we're at a total of, I believe it is 35 sirens, to be close to the mark, 35, if I'm not mistaken. These sirens are expensive, and not every community has them. Luckily, we get a lot of complaints about they go off long every third Saturday. I didn't hear mine, but the truth of it is, it's better to have them, in my opinion, than not to. There's so many redundant systems now with cell phones, instant alerts, NOAA weather radios. It seems like everybody has one in an office that goes off. But I just wanted the committee to know that the siren system we have is very effective, but it's very costly. For instance, last Friday, I went out to a site just to watch one being serviced that is working. We have individuals around the county that adopt a siren. We have no way of knowing if a siren's going to go off or not during a test. So we ask people, let us know. Give us a call if you don't hear it, or if you see it going off but not rotating, and they give us a call. And the last one was near Town and Country, and it turns out that this isn't like turning on a fan in the kitchen. These are huge phase motors that run 220 and have been impacted with snow. As you know, this winter has been horrible. And when these impellers get frozen, if the siren stops at just the right direction, it gets pounded from the west. That impeller in there that makes the siren go is frozen. It kicks on the motor and it can't move. Well, you have an overload. Even with modern circuit breakers, it doesn't take long before a couple of tests fries that motor up. So I went out there just to see what this was all about, and went out there with the crew. It was rather interesting. It was one of our smaller sirens. They took it down, and sure enough, two of the main leads in the motor windings were completely fried. That single siren, the smallest one, was over $5,800 to repair that day. We have budget monies for this, but I cross my fingers that, you know, we don't lose another one. So these are issues, you know, that citizens and folks like you need to be aware of. So when it comes budget time and we say, why do you need all that money for siren maintenance? And that's with a contract with Fulton Industries out of Illinois to come up and service that. So just a little information about sirens. And I guess long term is our hazard mitigation plan coming up for renewal. It expires in 2015. It's an extensive document that entails everything about Kenosha County. Every burb, every area, every hazard, every statistic you want to imagine about this county is in that document. It's pretty much a risk and hazard analysis of everything in Kenosha County. And we have one like many of the other counties, but eventually they expire and need to be renewed. I did apply for a grant for that to get it renewed. It's quite costly. However, we were denied, as was every other county. So that's an issue that will be coming across our desk, my desk, probably about 2015. Hopefully by then monies will be available, but something else to look at for the future. I know I've thrown a lot at you, but it's everything I've been learning as I came into the office and everything I want to do to move forward and to, you know, make it a better place for the people of the county and be useful down there. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to help you out what I do know.
Gil, can you get a copy of that list to Linda so she can email it out to us?
The list?
Your whole short-term, long-term goals?
Certainly can.
Thanks.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Piggybacking on that, if you could come in at least quarterly, if not every half a year, to give updates to this executive committee. I won't be sitting here, but I think it's important to see when you have goals and ideas you want to move forward where they are. And I think these are things that, you know, maybe not all of us have paid a lot of attention to, and that's why I asked you to come in. I think it's very important, and I think it's an area that, I mean, you're excited because you're just taking over and you're seeing the challenge, and I like that. I like that aggressiveness, and I think that, you know, bringing the awareness level of something that we need to do, and I'd certainly like, as a board member, or, you know, bring this up, you know, quarterly or semi-annually, you know, with where you are with these things. Yeah, I think it would be good information.
No, I appreciate the support, and I can certainly come by quarterly and also, you know, let you know about any new things that are going on or how these turned out. So
that would
be
great.
To.
Thank you,
sir.
Okay, item number 7, Supervisor Johnson had a test today, so she couldn't make it. We're moving this item to the next board meeting, so she will be giving this report at the next county board meeting. Discussion by the committee chairs on transitional items continuing to the next term. I put this on because I just wanted to have the leaders of the committees in case there's things that are on there that, you know, may not be wrapped up in the next month or so that we're going to be looking at for the next term. So I wanted to, and we'll start by me asking Supervisor Alverman some questions. Where we are on the ash borer stuff?
Right now we're waiting on some proposals from logging companies. What we're going to try to do is get some commercial people involved, if it's possible. They won't get involved unless there's a good railhead, which there is in Silver Lake near two of the parks that we're concerned with, because they can't make money unless they've got the rail. But they could do it right out of Silver Lake. Braytondale is the other big one, and that could go to Silver Lake also. That's close enough to Silver Lake. So we're trying to get interest right now from them, and you know, it would still cost us money. It's not like they'd pay for it, but it would cost us a lot less. Otherwise, John has geared up some of the more serious removals that we need to do that would be, say, near a hiking trail, that type of thing. Our guys can handle that. So we are one of the only counties that did do a full DNR, you know, had any of this study done. So we're way ahead, but we're not to a point where we would know exactly how much money to put in the budget. You know, but the county executive's aware because he'd been at these meetings also. But as I'd say we're probably looking at a 5-year plan.
Yeah, because I think I read, which kind of blew me away, an article that they popped up in Racine, and I think I read it just like a month ago.
Yeah, they've been there before.
Huh? Yeah, those little bastards.
But they're just,
weather?
They're just finding them. I mean, we've known about this for years and years. So, I mean, the fact that they found some in Silver Lake last year doesn't mean they weren't in Silver Lake too.
No, I know. I get it. It just piqued my curiosity on where we were with that, because I know that you reported on it, and I just know that, you know, seeing that over the winter just shocked me. I thought I might be dreaming, but evidently not. So I just wondered
the whole thing, the estimate from our forester and from the DNR people, the whole thing is probably going to cost us about $2 million.
Yeah.
But we're talking 1,400 trees at Fox River, more than that at Brightdale, you know, but we are not going to be naturally replacing one. So a lot of those are wild trees, you know. There might be four of them here, you know. So it's something that we can control. It's going to make a aesthetic difference on the golf courses more than anywhere. That's where we're really going to have to, you know, do most of our spending.
We get a commercial interest involved with that. Would that $2 million be lower?
Yeah.
The number?
Yeah. And again, we'd still be paying. Repair. That's the other thing. It's been weird to do pothole repair because of the weather, but also our guys have been too busy to do any pothole repair. Because they, like, again, tomorrow morning they're going to be out for 2 days, you know. So a lot of that hasn't gotten done because of the temperatures and things, but also because they've been busy. The other thing with the salt is that Gary does buy for 2 years. Unfortunately, we've used up most of the
2 years, so we're going to almost have to buy for
two again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be available. You know, that's not a problem. They're working 7 days a week in Pennsylvania. It's underground mining. They just can't ship it on the Great Lakes anymore. So that's the big buy. And if you talk about a normal winter is 7,500 tons that we would usually use.
Right.
And, you know, we're closer to 12,000 tons. So, looking at a budget item, it's about $50 a ton. So we're talking $700,000 to $800,000 needed for purchasing salt next year.
That's for 2 years.
For 2 years' supply, and notoriously, or historically, that works for us. We don't usually use 12.
No.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing to do.
I think there's going. I think we're going to be hit next year with, like I said, more salt purchase, and that's why I want to bring it to everybody's attention. It's going to be a big budget item.
Right.
You know.
But they'll have to work it within the department's budget. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have
Exactly. But, I just want to – that's something I could see coming down the pike, the same thing with the Ashmore stuff. I mean, these are things that – you're right, we can't get out of spending that money.
No. And that's why I report
But we got to know where we're going with this.
And that's why every month and every week or every 2 weeks I've been saying these things so no one gets shocked. And the Ashmore thing, I really wanted to get that out last fall. So, I mean, so we're prepared. Mentally.
So basically, we're kind of behind on the whole potholing, hole filling system just because of what's been going
on. Oh, yeah.
Because they would do it throughout the winter periodically if it was.
Yeah, and usually you get some thaw periods. Like yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
One day.
How are we doing on the retention of the employees with the two-tier system? I know in finance we bumped up the.
Right.
Wages and stuff like that, because they're leaving other communities.
From what I've been told by the tenured employees, is that the county really made out well. That the new hires that we did in the last 2 years have worked out fine. The tenured people love working with this group. They said we did very well on the people we hired. And retention with that dollar increase is going to be made, you know, much easier. We did, as did most highway departments, lost quite a few people. Anybody that was close or could retire did. You know, and because they were all scared. The Act 10 thing scared everybody. But from what I've been told, and again, this is by guys that are pretty hard-nosed guys that were been on the highway department for years. They like this new group of people.
Good. Thank you.
Dennis, for the salt, how much sand are we mixing with our salt, and how does it even affect the cost of the salt when we mix it with it? Does it lower it enough that we're going to be okay?
Well, no, we're doing it so that in April we've got something left.
Extended.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because if say we get a bad item, we're in trouble. So, I mean, we've got to extend this out.
And does it extend it out enough, though?
Well, Gary thinks it does. He measures every day.
1,700 tons of salt left.
Yeah.
And we've got 836 tons of salt sand. The sand is a byproduct of the quarry that we have out at Central TV, so the cost to us is nothing.
Just hauling.
So just hauling and stuff like that. So cost-wise, it reduces the salt cost by 50% and extends the spreadability by 50%. Now, it doesn't do anything to melt the snow or ice or keep the ice off, but it provides traction because it's gritty. So as far as that goes, in this type of weather, it's not going to do anything. When it's slushy and stuff like that, it's not going to help. But you don't really put a lot of stuff up anyway. Except in icy areas, but when it's really, really cold, it doesn't affect the job of just providing some kind of stopping power at intersections and stuff like that. But it's a 50-50 mix is what we're using.
Well, we've gotten by the last two snows. It's worked out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Last week we had three snows.
Well, aren't we getting kind of help from being higher up too? As far as ice melting?
Yeah, even when it was below the 30 degrees and sun comes out, it was starting to melt.
I've noticed a huge difference.
Yeah.
You know, just around home. This March sun is a big.
Thank you, Dennis. What about youth and governance? Where are we with that?
We have always had our interviews the last Tuesday and Wednesday of March every year, going for the next term. One thing that we did not count on is that Central and Wilmot have spring break this year during that time. So we are going high-tech, and we are doing some of them through Skype. Just because we did not anticipate spring break.
Being so late.
And if they fill out the application and they make that cut, we want to be able to interview them. So we're going to have to do some of those over Skype this year. We have hired a new youth educator, Carmelo Gavilla. He is from Fond du Lac County. He was recommended by John DeMont Mullen. He has the same energy as John. He's going to be a great fit with the office. He's going to be working closely with Paris over at KUSD and helping out all over there. His job description changed quite a bit. He's going to be supervising the people that take care of like 4-H and youth and governance and everyone like that now. So that's next step.
Sure.
Okay. Country Thunder is coming to us tomorrow night. We've worked with them a lot over the last several years, and that way they're going to get their activity control license early this year. Lots of changes over there. The property was bought by some people in Texas. They work well with Brian out of Nashville, and it'll be a whole different game.
Yeah, that's the earliest they've ever been ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ever.
Yeah. I started calling in
July. July.
No, it's it exactly. 12th hour.
Okay. So if there's any problems or anything, you'll know that early?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Planning and Development is still working on updating all the ordinances for Kenosha County. We're still planning on bringing that to the town possibly in April. And then over to the board sometime later this year. Okay. I think. Do you have something specific?
No. Anything with the sheriff's department? Anything you got going on?
No. The Kickstand Bar and Grill is coming to our committee tomorrow. I asked Donna to have the owner patron come. I had a lengthy discussion with Captain Weicker about, I don't know, Kim, about this, how really important or how much these patrons or owner bar owners put value on these cabaret licenses. Do you know what I mean? Do they really just care, don't care? It's a formality, this, that, and the other. So we had talked about, you know, because there's really no, if you get in trouble, nobody's going to take it away from you once you got it type thing, you know what I mean? Either you got it or you don't got it. So we're just kind of talking it over about maybe tying possibly this one with a liquor license potentially. If there's a violation, that there's going to be more to lose than just, you know what I mean, nothing at this stage of the game. But nobody wants to waste their time. We just don't want this thing to, you know what I mean? We want them to take this seriously. I don't know if that's going anywhere. Obviously, there'd have to be a change in ordinances in relationship to that. But I do think it's something to look at.
Do they have to bring that after a certain amount of time? Or is it just once you get a cabaret license, sure, you get it?
Every year.
I mean, don't you have to have it renewed
every year?
Every year.
After the probationers, every year.
Yeah.
But we don't think that the majority of these patrons are taking it seriously. You know what I mean? Because then you can just go get a special event license for one time or this, that, and the other. We're just thinking that potentially this, you know, let's have them have some skin in the game. Maybe if they aren't following the rules, there's going to be something to pay other than nothing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, classic example, Dennis, you brought that up. I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, that
you
was
know?
A good catch
well,
in the paper.
It was just in the paper.
That's what I mean. So my point is, if they're going to be violating certain, they need to be held accountable. So I don't know where that's going. I just wanted to throw that out.
Okay. All right. Well, that concludes that section of what we're doing here, and I'm sure that we don't have any other updates. that you just gave them, you know, unless you have...
One thing that we didn't talk about was facilities, and naturally, there's all kind of ongoing stuff there. So, I mean, this building, we haven't even started yet. That's going to take a while.
Where are we with that?
They actually should be mobilizing, like, March 31st, they said. That just means probably getting a couple fences over here or something, but, I mean, that's...
What are we going to do for parking, then? Because we're going to lose all this, we're going to lose all the employees parking in the back. We made an agreement with someone around here to park these vehicles or have a place to park, or...
There's nowhere. I mean, it's going to be like when we were working on a courthouse.
Right. I'm just saying, we had that problem, now we have one over here.
Although, for some of that, we didn't have that parking structure working, so...
I think that'll help tremendously.
Yeah.
Well, that's always filled up, though.
What's the timeline on repair work, roughly?
Oh, I think it'll probably be like 4, 5, 6 months, you know? I'm not positive.
I'm just saying, roughly, what are we estimating?
I'd say 6 months, by the time they start. Because they're going to be doing tuck pointing like here. I mean, if there's a loose brick, it's one of those full board. And if they find something when we dig around, we don't know if there's a diesel tank over here or over there. But there's contingency money for that. And the money and the cost came in below, you know, so we don't know. But that's the longest ongoing thing I think we have. The other thing would be, we haven't gotten those RFPs or heard anything back on for the golf courses, for the food service.
When are we supposed to hear from that?
We met with them and gave them permission. That would be 2 months ago, right?
Springs are on its way. That's all.
Right. So we haven't heard. And then actually the only other long-term, but that's just about done now, that tower. That's supposed to be, they're going to do a test run on that tower near the end of the month, and then it's supposed to be full.
It's taken help.
2 years.
So once we're done with this building, we're pretty much back on track with the maintenance of all the buildings, back up to snuff, so to speak?
Yeah, and then the Yule House, they we gave the realtor permission to dicker. Lower the price. We were getting, nobody looking. Weather was bad, too. And now there's been some people looking, but they all are scared. Naturally, it's an old building, and scared of what about the heating, what about the air conditioning. And we told Carol, if they're going to get this thing that cheap, buyer beware.
Right.
I mean, you're going to have to spend a couple hundred thousand dollars.
As is.
And that could be a beautiful mansion again, and they're going to get it for under $300,000. So there was a school, there was somebody else looking at it, but there's nobody's made any offers. But somebody's going to come, somebody's going to do well.
Well, and I think when the weather breaks, you'll have more people moving, more action.
Right.
To.
And then the, at the Katy Park, we are still, slowly expanding things. And I've got a deal that one of our larger corporations is going to be helping us with some parking lots and things this year. John has applied for some more of the stewardship grants, which are 50-50, that's state, to do some of that. But the donation is going to be from Case International on some equipment. And they're trying to get heavier into construction equipment as well as farm equipment. So what they're going to do is set up equipment there, this is if it all works out properly, and bring dealers in from Iowa, Minnesota, all over, and that's where they're going to be able to test them. They're going to test them to our specs on our drawings for our parking lots. And
beautiful partnership.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And this was just, out of the blue trying to think of, different entities around that could do it. And it just so happens that my son is the PR guy for Case. And so we were just talking one day, and I said, would they ever do, the guys, the big guys kind of like the idea. So
Right.
That's, but none of that happens quickly, but it'll probably be summer sometime, you know, that that happens. And then Snap-on also has approached us about some partnership possibly out there. But what they would like to partnership in would be in our maintenance building, setting up a state-of-the-art maintenance facility or in our parks department, then being able to bring people there with them. And so, I mean, that's something that the executive, I don't know if Chris has been involved with that yet, but so that could then blossom into something more too. But again, that kind of stuff. But that's in the works. The parking lot stuff, we've got the drawings for, and that's going to happen. So we may not. I mean, they won't pay for everything, but the stewardship grant will. Because when you do that, and you did purchase with stewardship state money, DNR money, we've got to pave those things then. You know, right now we're just gravel. But if we do any driveways and roads in there, then we've got to do it like to their specs. So there'll be some money, but it'll be like matching. And some of our matching, we can use some of this donation. And our matching, it doesn't have to be like a dollar that we spend. You know, it can be a value that we have built. So, well, that's what's kind of major besides the Emerald Ashport kind of cooking with it. And the golf courses are ready to roll. They're all keyed up. And they've done well at these golf shows and got the new furnace in at Braytondale and the flooring, and they're all decorated.
When does the debt service fall on in? Is it this year?
This year.
When's your next meeting?
First Monday. So?
April.
The following week.
I'd like you to put on your agenda to get an update from Carol on that liquor RFP.
Yeah. I thought she would have reported.
Well, I thought so too.
Yeah.
So, right. If you could make that it's on your agenda, because you'll meet before
this one.
Yeah.
Because that came from this committee, so I thought she would have.
Well, I mean, I'll be calling her.
Yeah.
But we need to get her in front of committees. So.
Right.
That really bothers me.
It does.
It really bothers me.
I truthfully think that really if somebody was really concerned about it, that we'd have heard something by now. I don't think it sounds like good news. No.
When did it actually
go out? 2 months.
I think we authorized it the last time she came before us.
Yeah.
We said send it out. We looked at it.
February something?
I could give you a little bit of update on that if you wish.
Yeah.
Please, feel free.
We had two responses. One is the same person that you disqualified letter to about last year. Less qualified than that. We are the reason that it hasn't come forthcoming is we're trying to do a lot of research into the financials, research into quality and stuff like that. The proposal the county's all at risk, they're getting paid basically a profit on top of whatever they spend. So if they spend more, they get more, which doesn't sound like a very good scenario because there's no incentive for them to actually be cost savings or, you know, do it economically. So we're having to do a lot of research into background check kind of stuff on financials and just operations and stuff like that. So that's where that is. We're trying to get all the ducks in a row before we get to the A report. I want to make sure we're comparing apples to apples. What they can perform and the proposed revenue that they're going to make. One of them is double what they've made in the last year and stuff. So we're trying to get where are their assumptions and stuff like that. So we have lots of questions.
I can believe that assumption. I mean, if they get alcohol, they will. Their revenues.
Sure. So we just had two responses.
Okay. Well, at least you're giving me something that makes me feel a little better. I don't know how we can deal with this. I mean, if they're not acceptable, I don't know what other alternatives we have.
We put out the bids, Carol said that she, normally we put it on the website, we make announcements to people on the list. This time she researched people, she sent out, you know, invitations everywhere she could find.
I know she sent out all over.
Yeah.
The alternative that we would have, if nobody wants to take on the full food service, is to issue somebody a Class A liquor license. That would be our alternative. If we want to have alcohol out of that golf course, we can't have one ourselves.
So somebody would take over just the liquor portion of it?
Just the liquor portion.
Or we'd still do the food portion?
Right. Seems like
maybe
we're not.
That's getting, what we need to do.
Maybe
next.
That's a start.
Seems know. Like we're not getting anybody to do the
other. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's what we look into next.
Right.
Because I'm a firm believer that that's going to be a huge draw. I mean, in talking to the golf people, you know, the heads before, they were saying, you know, they've had people not come, not bring their tournaments there because of that.
Oh, sure.
I've had many people tell me, you'd do so much better if you had liquor out there. We golf out there, we don't stay out there because there's no liquor out there.
No.
I'm more than...
That's got to be a problem. That's, I mean, if we're going to be all in on the golf stuff, we're going to be all in. Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
It takes forever to get anything done there.
So who would have to issue the liquor license?
Pardon?
Who would have to issue the liquor license?
Well, I mean, like, you need somebody that's already got one. You know, like Jetty's is the
closest.
Jetty's Bar has got a liquor license in Brighton. That thing's in. Would Jetty's do it? You know, I mean,
right.
Under their place, you know, so it's just that we can't.
Yeah.
But the town
do
of Brighton.
Municipalities do liquor licenses?
No. Like at Kemper, we don't have one, but the private entity has one.
So, like Pleasant Prairie doesn't issue their own liquor licenses?
Yeah.
Okay, so like
that's
where.
Tom
where
Salem does. Right?
Yeah, Salem Brighton would have to issue
Brighton
a liquor
right, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Okay. I mean, so we could get a company to come in and they could issue them.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's got to be a non-governmental agency.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I don't understand.
Okay. All right. Any other business? Any other comments? Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Dennis, how quick can you get that done?